Hello and welcome to Pod 19 of the official Palace Pod. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, which you can watch on the Palace app, on YouTube, on the club website and all the social media channels. Basically everything Palace and on the big screen in the stadium and the screen in the fan zone as well. I'm going to stop listing things where you can watch Palace TV now. Okay, so this podcast, on it later on, we have got Andros Townsend talking to Premier League Productions. We've also got Statman, and we've got Roy's weekly press conference. But before all that, it's a bit of a Danny Butterfield special. We headed up to Milton Keynes to catch up with Danny a few months ago. We did the interview sat in the stadium, Stadium MK. We did it so that we could get a video about his hat-trick that we put out before we played Wolves before. But also, I wanted to do a chat on his whole career at Palace because he was at the club for 8 years. So much happened in that time. And this is the audio. This is just the full audio of the whole interview. So it might jump around the timeline a little bit because it's not a final, finished, polished article when we take bits and reorder them so that they make more sense. So this is the full audio as it was in the stands in Milton Keynes. Right, Danny, let's go back in time, 2002. What were those circumstances that brought you to Palace?
I think this is right. I was at Grimsby at the time, and we played Palace right at the end of the season at Grimsby. And I think we ended up winning 4-2, I think. Well, it might have been, because we played Wimbledon sort of, and Palace back-to-back almost, and we beat 1-4-2, 1-6-2. I remember playing right midfield in that, and I think I probably created 3 of the 4 goals or something. And I think that obviously stoked up a bit of interest. And then I was out of contract at Grimsby. Grimsby made a bit of an error in not offering me a contract in time, so I was entitled at 22 to leave on a free. And I had a phone call from Terry Bullivant in the summer asking what my situation was. And before I knew it, I was on my way down to Selhurst to negotiate a contract and sign. So it sort of happened towards the end of the off-season. But no, I'd signed in time for pre-season starting 2002.
How long did it take you to establish yourself in the team?
Well, Trevor Francis signed me, and he sort of had me straight away in the team for the first game of the season, playing right of a 3 in midfield. So he was playing like 5 at the back, and he wanted me in the middle of the park, and it was sort of straight from there. And I then sort of got ushered out to the sort of right wing berth and stayed there for the next sort of 18 months, 2 years really.
So then Trevor Francis left, Steve Kemba took over as manager. What was it like the start of that season? What was the reason for the bad form?
I'm not sure really. We had the players were certainly behind Steve. He brought a real good training culture to the club. We were all behind him, but the results were just, we had a lot of individual errors. I remember we played at Wigan on TV and got beat 5-0. I think it was probably 5 at half time, I think. Wigan were a good team at the day. It was live on TV, and we were sort of all over the place. People were making poor decisions at the wrong times, and live on TV, I don't think it helped. And before we knew it, Steve Kemba had been sacked, and we were all pretty good at the time because we had a good squad, a good calibre of player, but it just wasn't clicking. We just, I don't know, things just weren't happening. Individual errors were costing us games, and we were losing games heavily. And then he obviously got the sack, and Ian Dowie came in, and the rest is history, that year.
Yeah, let's talk about that, actually. Ian Dowie came in. How much hard work was it doing all that extra boxing and swimming?
It was a complete flipping training regime. It was hard work. We were physically at a level where the majority of us hadn't been before. But along the way, was getting results, so you felt it was having a big effect on the results and on the way he was playing, and the momentum just sort of carried on. The snowball effect carried on. We got more and more confident, and towards the end of the season, talking March, April time, there was only one team going to go up and get in the playoffs, and that was us. The momentum just seemed to be with us, and the mentality of winning games and sticking together and the fitness and everything just seemed to be clicking for us.
Do you remember about that, the day at Cardiff? The scenes afterwards were pretty special on the pitch.
Yeah, I always remember walking out the tunnel. West Ham had this pristine white tracksuit top and we had this mucky yellow kit that we wore in the semi-finals and Brian the kit man couldn't quite get out the stains from the celebrations at Sunderland. So I remember thinking, we look a bit rug-ass Rovers here. But at the same time, that was us. That was our identity. Nothing was going to stand in our way. And he looked across the line and saw them. We was hearing stories that they had all celebration parties already lined up back at Upton Park, flights for all the players and wires back to blah, blah, blah. And when you hear them sort of stories, you sort of know that it's going to be our day. I remember it being quite tense. I remember it being ridiculously hot. I remember thinking, if I kick this ball high enough, I think I'm going to hit the roof here. It felt like really intense and on top of you. But all along, I still think the application and desire from everyone, it was only going to be our day. And the celebrations, it was inevitable Ships was going to get the goal, because AJ had been the one banging in the goals all season, and Ships was the one that was doing an unbelievable amount of hard graft off the ball for AJ to benefit. So it was right that Ships was the one that gets the tap in and AJ's work. And then we just sort of hung on in there. And celebrations afterwards, we just tootled off to a little local hotel where we stayed at before, and with our families, and it just felt even more us, and it being a small celebration, but such a massive thing for the football club.
It's a great team spirit that year, but especially the famous trio of you, AJ and Sean Derry as mates. How did that happen, that all three of you becoming good friends?
We all signed within the same sort of week, 10 days, and so therefore we was all in the hotel together. And for sort of 3-4 years, we were inseparable. We were like brothers. I think our girlfriends were sort of pushed to the side because we're going out as lads, and I'm not saying nightclub and things like that, but we're going to the coffee shop. I'll be home at 5-6 o'clock after I've been training. We were like brothers, really. And I think our camaraderie around the place sort of was perhaps infectious for everyone, because when it was time to be serious, we were serious. We trained hard. But at the same time, we had a lightheartedness of enjoying what we was doing along the way, and I think that was a big thing that us three sort of added to the dressing room.
Any decent pranks? Cling film ones or anything like that?
Plenty. Us three started like a clothes banter for a while, and it got to the point where the girlfriends actually intervened, because people were buying things. I turned up one day in a new pair of jeans, and by the time I finished training, there were jean shorts. It was like... I remember Sean got a tracksuit, a grey Nike tracksuit, and he had to go to a meeting with his girlfriend about a mortgage or something on a property. And he didn't have time to go home and get changed. So I got a marker pen and wrote Juicy across the arse. So he's had to turn up in a Juicy trackie. And he didn't even clock it until his missus had seen him. So, what's on your tracksuit? And then, yeah. But it was just relentless. AJ would have T-shirts turned into vests, and it was just, every time a new item of clothing was bought, it was just cut to shreds or drawn on, so we had to cut a truce on that one.
But back to football, got promoted. Was it disappointing the next season for you when Emerson Boyce was brought in and you didn't get to play in the Premier League as much as you would have wanted?
The biggest disappointment, I was all set to start the first game, and we played QPR away in a pre-season friendly, and it was a really odd one, a goal kick, I always remember it. I've gone up for a header and the left winger kept hold of my right leg. So my right leg was high, my left leg was planted, and I've fallen forward. And I basically snapped my left hamstring. And that kept me out for probably 12 weeks. So I was obviously devastated at that point, because I was due to start the Premier League season. So Emerson came in, did great. I then get back around Christmas time, and I had a double hernia operation, which set me back again another 6-8 weeks. And then I managed to get back in the team for a little period, probably 10 games, 12 games. But I was never quite back to where I was before for that short period of time. I couldn't get back to the level I was at the season before because of the hamstring and the hernia, which was really frustrating, because a dream to get into the Premier League and play a big, well, have a contribution in getting there and being part of the team, and then not having the chance to go and do it was frustrating. But fair play to Emerson, he came in, he was terrific.
Was the problem with the team that season that maybe they brought in too many players? Definitely. When what got you up was this tight-knit group?
Definitely. I think it's hard as a manager, now sitting this side of the fence, the expectations of fans is to go and sign stars that blow the fans away. As I said, we had an unbelievable team spirit to get us there initially. And we went and signed people like Gonzalo Sorondo, Nicola Ventola, Sandor Torghelli, Yunus Kolka,
Vasilis Lakis.
And we went and signed these players that didn't understand even Caviedes, the Colombian number 10. Yeah, we'll forget that one. But we went and signed these players that from the outside the fans would expect you to take you to that next level, but they didn't understand our dressing room, they didn't understand English football, they didn't understand the English mentality, they didn't understand that one person doesn't do his job, you get dragged into line. And Ian Dowie went and picked three or four of these players at the start of the season, and by Christmas time I think he actually reverted back to what got him there, and we just fell short at Charlton obviously. And I think that the disappointing thing as players that got you there is, let's see how it goes from the word go. And I think that was a frustration. And even then, it's still in our hands with the last game of the season when you're winning 2-1 at Charlton to stay in there, which was equally disappointing. But I think the season as a whole, I think it was tough to take with so many foreign signings that I can't remember any of them, looking at any of them and going, maybe the keepers, Julian and Gabor, actually offered us, you know, was an addition to the squad. Whereas the others, I'm thinking, is there any that sort of really added something to the team which made us stay in the Premier League or have the opportunity to? I'm not so sure.
With Ian, is there a weird sense of like what could have been for him as a manager? Because at that point, it felt like this was this special young manager that had got a miracle in that season to get us promoted. But it never really happened for him after Palace.
No, I think the timing, I think it was a great fit for him because he took us to another level fitness-wise. He took us to a resilient, determined group of players that wanted to do well for ourselves and him. He obviously left under strange circumstances going to Charlton. And like you say, it never sort of materialised for him then as a manager. So I'm sure he looks back and thinks if he'd have done things differently, maybe he'd have stayed at Palace for longer and things may have turned out differently for him as a managerial career. But in the short space of time he was there, I think he had a big impact on Palace. And I think post Ian Dowie, I think the club did take a little bit of a wobble for a period.
You mentioned Gabor Kerai there. We're actually going to go out and do an interview with him in Hungary. What do you remember about his grey jogging bottoms?
Brilliant. I still speak to Gabor. He still messaged me happy birthday every year and happy new year every year. Happy Christmas. He's top. And he's doing great over in Hungary with his coaching academy. He is an unbelievable character. I remember turning up to a service station once going to a game. And you know, you go in there and there's your usual camping chairs or your T-shirts with a wolf, black T-shirt with a wolf on the front. He walked into this service station and there was these T-shirts with tiger, black T-shirts with tigers on the front. And he went and bought about 15, 20 of them. And I was like, Gabor, what are you doing? He says, this is my lucky charm. So he used to wear that black T-shirt underneath his goalie top every game. So ask him about it. His grey tracky bottoms, he didn't wear them initially. I think he was too embarrassed. If you get clips, I'm pretty sure he didn't wear them for the first couple of games.
I think a goal against Chelsea went through his legs and then he went back.
And he wished he should have worn them because that was his lucky charm, that if he spills it, they would stop the ball. But a great character that they used to train sometimes and say, I'm not going to use my hands. I'll just save everything with my body or my arms. I'm not going to use my hands just to practice. And people were like, what? It was just so different to most goalkeepers, but I thought he was brilliant for us. Some of the things he used to take from crosses and corners were brilliant, but the tracksuit bottoms are his trademark and some people find it funny and some people admire him from having the guts to do it. But he was a good addition to the squad, for sure.
So then the next season just came close to going back up. We talked to Michael Hughes and he said that one of the biggest mistakes was letting Neil Shipperley go because he felt like...
Definitely.
He felt like he would have been perfect.
Definitely. In the dressing room, Ships is one of them that... Ships is one of them that is always reliable, You know what he's going to give you. He's going to give you that every single game with his ball retention, his ability to find AJ with a pass with his head. It was all underrated. And I think labelled with Ships because of his physical shape and his mobility, he was labelled as not being able to do it in the Premier League. You need to look today for former player, Murray at Brighton. Still doing it at, what is he now, 35? You wouldn't say he's particularly mobile, but he's really effective at what he does and he's still scoring goals at the top level. And I think Ships was hard done by and not trusted to be able to offer the team something in that. And we definitely missed him the year that we went back down because he was doing that for Sheffield United and we needed that. But he his attributes to the team, and he if you ask the players who would have been one of the first players on the team sheet, I think they'd have said Ships over AJ. Just for his, especially as a defender, I'll clip the ball within 3, 4, 10 yards of Ships and I know it's going to stick on his chest. He just had that know-how and experience of being a pest for the opposition in that final third. So it was a definite miss towards that season.
So he didn't quite make it that season. What were the next couple of years like for you? Peter Taylor came in, didn't he?
Yeah.
For that year, it was a bit of a weird period.
Peter came in and he basically said that we're going to play football. And he signed Matty Lawrence from Millwall and put Matty as a centre-half and played him right back. So my initial thoughts were, since his signing, I've got to sit tight in. And I felt that I was more of a footballer than Matty Lawrence was. Matty's a great player, by the way. And I love playing with Matty at centre-half. He would run for a brick wall for you. Top centre-half, top defender. But at the time, I was frustrated with Peter Taylor because I thought, we're playing football as a fullback. This is my game. And so I was a bit stop-starty, really, under Peter. I like Peter as a man. I thought he was a nice guy. I think that might have been one of his weaknesses, that he was a nice guy. But I didn't enjoy my time at Palace under Peter Taylor as much as I did other managers.
And Neil Warnock came in. How much of a difference did he make for you?
Again, a completely different character. I've said it 2 or 3 times now, he made everyone pull in the same direction and everyone wanted to win for Neil Warnock. He just had this, I won't say tactically, I would say his man management skills were brilliant. And he had a good knack of signing players that would put the bodies on the line, that had a creative spark in the final third. And everyone, the team he built, was all fighting for each other. We didn't have anyone that we had to carry through games. Everyone, he sort of, I remember one of the first things he did was, we had 5-a-side, shin pads, boots, really small pitch, and he was throwing balls in every 2 seconds to see who would tackle and clatter into each other. And Sean Derry had half tipped me off about this. He said he'll do this for sure. So make sure you rattle into tackles or he'll have you out. So people were hacking each other. It was like 12-a-side on a 20 by 30 and everyone's rattling into tackles. And after the session, he said, Courty, Leon Court, he said, you've got a record, haven't you? He said, yeah. He said, I've not been booked for 2 years. He went, get your agent to ring me. He'll be next at the door. we was like, all right, you've got to win tackles and get booked. So, but no, we had a great team spirit under Neil, and we obviously fell short in the playoffs against Bristol City. But.
So what saw you go out of the team before you went out on loan to Charlton?
Neil, it was really strange, and it's typical of Neil, because he said to me, I need a player to go out on loan because I need to sign another striker because we're not scoring goals. And he said, whether it's true or not, he said, the only player that clubs are going to come in, that have offered to come in to take a player on loan is you. He said, I don't want you to leave. If you go, you'll come back next year and be my first choice right back. So this isn't the end of your Palace career. I need you to do me a favour. And they went and signed the lad Stokes from...
Anthony Stokes.
Anyway, I don't know how he did. But I ended up tooling off to Charlton thinking that's the end of my Palace career. He said all that. But listen, if you're going out on loan, you're not coming back. But it was true to his word. The next year, I'll come back in pre-season. And he was like, no, you're going to start for me at right back. So really weird, but sort of typical of Neil at the same time, to shove me off out on loan to Charlton for a relegation battle, which was all but over as soon as I arrived. But the final nail in the coffin, as often the fans said. But no, it was sort of done as a favour, I suppose. But weirdly enough, I was still playing football regularly in the Championship, and I did go to Charlton in the aim of contributing to them staying in the league.
What was it like for you as a player when someone like Nathaniel Clyne comes through, a young guy coming in at right back, it's his same position as you? What was it like? Because we've got a similar situation at Palace where we had Joel Ward as the right back, yeah, and now Aaron Wan-Bissaka has come, yeah, in. What's it like?
Terrific player, Aaron, by the way. I really, really like him. I like Joel as well. It's when you're a little bit more wiser and experienced, it just ups your game. You've got to have that determination within inside you to think you're not having my shirt. And Kleine was still really young and coming through and learning his trade, and it wasn't a head-to-head, as in I don't speak to him, I don't try and, you know, add bits to his game. I was still helping Kleine to develop as a young player and, you know, try and add bits to him. But it just added a bit more determination, I suppose, for me to try and stay in the team and fight for the shirt. But good for the club in that we were producing our own.
And now moving on to the 9-10 season, you've been at the club for 7, coming on to 8 years at this point, but this is what you're now most famous for, the hat-trick. Just, we go back a little bit before that, club went into admin between the first game against Wolves, wasn't it, and the replay, because I think, was it away to Newcastle?
Yeah.
What was that like, getting the news?
Well, it was sort of on the horizon. We were sort of hearing rumours, and PFA were coming in and having meetings, and I remember Portsmouth sort of being in the same predicament, although they were Premier League and paying hundreds of thousands of pounds to the players, etc. And it was sort of, the rumours were getting stronger and stronger. We jumped on a flight up to Newcastle, and by the time we'd landed, we'd gone into administration and been docked. So we'd gone from, I think we were in the playoffs, to jump, and I think we ended up in the bottom three, or one out the bottom three. So we'd gone from going up to Newcastle and thinking we're fighting for promotion to we're in a right relegation battle here. I don't think we could have had a better squad to deal with it, because we had the Sean Derrys, Clint Hills, Matty Lawrence, who else did I say? Alan Lees. We had these characters that you wanted with you in the trenches. So even though we were in a relegation battle, we had the players, obviously, had the calibre to be fighting for the playoffs, because we were already doing that. But it's a difficult mindset when you drop a couple of points, you might slip out of the playoffs, or you drop a couple of points, you're in the bottom two. So the mindset swings a little bit. But we had a squad that were more than capable of fighting a way out of that. We took it right to the wire. But I think we were built to stay in the league that year with the squad that Neil had obviously built.
So by the time it came to that replay, there was actually more on it, because if you get through to the next round, there's more money.
Yeah.
So were you aware of that going into the game?
It was, because we knew cup competitions offered the club finances, and without thinking it, you don't think if we get a win here we might be able to get paid, and you don't have to shuffle your bank balance about to pay your mortgage, etc, etc. But you do know that it's a big contribution to the club to win that one, which is on TV, because of course you get the next leg. So we know about the importance of winning the game, and I know the Kleine turned down a move to Wolves actually the 2 or 3 days before, which meant obviously he was going to play, it was either going to be me play right back or Kleine play right back, but with selling Victor to Wigan, it had been, it freed up a place up top, which I was never going to fill. But in a training session under Neil Warnock, typical five-a-side, I played up front with Alan Lee, and Neil being Neil said, we'll go with that tomorrow. And we did.
How did he tell you?
I don't think he told us. It was sort of rumours, like everyone was joking about the dressing room, flipping net, but she'll be up top tomorrow with Al after scoring goals in five-a-sides like that. And it was like sniggery, sniggery. And then turn up to the game and he'd actually written it on the board and he'd say, no, Butcher, you play right of Al and Darren Ambrose, you play to the left of him. And it was a little bit comical, but it was also like a bit of a freebie for the squad, but for me, of thinking, listen, what's the worst that can happen? We're on TV, we're flipping, Butch gets embarrassed. We're on TV, the club get money, and we've got a chance of beating Wolves in a one-off game. So, yeah, and that was sort of the mentality going into it, but we still had a squad that we thought we were good enough to beat Wolves on the night.
Well, the goals came in the second half. How was your first half performance?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Yeah, it was terrible. I was thinking I could get dragged here. I was thinking, or I might get moved somewhere else, or it wasn't great. I remember looking back at it and thinking, I won't do anything particularly bad, but I won't do anything great. And you know, you're thinking, we're at home, we need to win. It's going to be me that comes off. It's a freebie, he's put me up there. And then I always remembered me playing balls towards Alan Lee. I knew where Alan flicked it. I could tell by his body shape the way he was going to flick it, whether he was going to flick to the side, was flick it straight. I just knew. Because 9 times out of 10, it was me playing them diagonals at Alan to begin with in the previous game. So that sort of helped, really, as the game was developing. I know Jules hit a couple towards him and I gambled on it. And I know he sort of went off and Neil Warnock was going mad for getting stitches in his head and he's wearing a headband. But the second half just seemed to click. We did go a little bit more direct to Al. And I was just gambling off of him, I suppose.
But the first one was it was actually a good save by Wayne Hennessy from the initial header. And then your striker's instinct.
Yeah, listen,
kicked in.
That is playing as a striker from under sevens all the way through to about under 12s. No, I think that was it. It must have been just an instinct thing on the night. I remember it won a corner, so I sort of play acted. It was a corner, won the corner, and then I just remember trotting back into the middle, thinking this might drop here. And Matty Lawrence produced an unbelievable header, which always gets forgotten. Wayne Hennessy makes a great save, and I was there with Mansian just to flick it in. So it was a great moment on the night, but it was great for the club to thinking we've got a chance of taking this on and winning it.
What did it feel like when you got the third one?
Comical, disbelief. It because it all happened so quickly, it was actually funny. It was actually funny on the. I remember looking at Sean Derry, and he's sort of going, and I'm going. So, it was just comical. I think the sort of character I was around the place. I knew all the lads was happy for me. I knew the lads was buzzing that it was happening to me because I was the dressing room joker and been at the club such a long time, and it was a real special moment for me. But as daft as it sounds, almost embarrassing at the same time, because that's not what I do. Yeah. And I enjoyed it. It's something that I treasure at the back of my mind, but I do still feel embarrassed talking about it because it sort of shouldn't have happened to me, but it did. And we got the club through to the next round, a little bit of money, and the club picked up and we went on and finished the season with a survival day at the end of it.
Yeah, you would have been remembered anyway, but it must be nice to know that you're going down in folklore. It's still the fastest hat-trick by a Palace player.
I think you often get players similar to, I'm not saying I was of his calibre, by the way, but players like Dennis Irwin at Man United, who a massive unsung hero, and he'll be remembered. But like you say, to be part of the history at Palace now with the hat trick, I'm sure it'll get broken one day or whatever, but to be part of the history and to remember at a club which was a massive part of my life for 8 years is a real bonus.
What did Neil Warnock say to you afterwards?
I told you'd do it. He took all the credit. He didn't let me do any of the press. It was all him. But I didn't mind that because he had the guts to give me the opportunity to do it. It's typical Neil. Who else would have put me up top? I very much doubt anyone would have done. So It was a free hit for me to do something on a night when there was no expectations on my shoulders anyway, because it's not the position I traditionally played. So a great experience, and still a funny one when you think about it, and some of the faces that were on the pitch at the time. It was, I should have had a fourth, by the way. I should have had a fourth. But a great experience, and obviously a part of the Palace history.
And you mentioned that Survival Sunday up at Hillsborough. Do you remember much about that?
I remember our team spirit. We had, without fail, every pre-game ritual was to whack the stereo on with Black Eyed Peas, I've Got a Feeling. So we'd all get up, even before we left, the Victor Moses, the Sean Scannells, we'd get them up purposefully on the feet, and we're all in a big huddle, and we're all dancing and singing, and we had that. And then we had I Would Walk 500 Miles blaring out, and we had fitness coach, Chris Wood. Right, lads, this is it. We've got 3 minutes before we're going out. Right, stereo one, crank it up. And I remember us getting to Sheffield Wednesday, and we left the dressing room door open. We had the music blaring, and you can hear the boots chunking on the floor. And we're all singing our heads off. And I remember Paul Hart, I'll tell you the story. But anyway, that day it was like, we don't care, we're going to win this. And the dressing room door's open, you can see what we're doing, and we're not bothered. We're going to win the game and survive, blah, blah. But I remember the first time we did it, when Paul Hart turned up, he said the team to up, blah, blah, right, get yourselves ready, you're going out. And as he started to walk out the dressing room, Shorty went, here we go, 3 minutes, turn the music on. And we were all bouncing and jumping and singing the two songs and going mental before the game. And after the game, he said, we'll stay up on that alone, the team spirit. And he was like completely blown away with the team spirit that he'd inherited. And I remember on the last day when we did it, you could see and sort of feel the air stand up on everyone's necks, like this is us and this is our time, including Harty and Dougie and John Pemberton. But we after the game, I'm pretty sure Harty was in tears with just the, he'd had a couple of bad managerial experiences, and I think he came in at Palace and it sort of reignited his love for the game again, and you could see that in him. But the spirit of the team and the togetherness sort of typified by our pre-match routine, I suppose.
Was it quite sad leaving the club that summer?
Massively. I've had the chance to say anything about it because you don't. I was away on holiday. I was out of contract, which a lot of us were because of the administration fiasco. I had a phone call from George Burley asking if I wanted to stay. Obviously said yeah. Then I had a phone call about a week later from him saying he changed his mind, he's going a different route, and he went and signed David Wright from Ipswich, which at the time I was devastated about. Palace was my club, I'd been there 8 years, I could see myself having a testimonial, I wanted to stay there till I stopped playing. That was my mindset at the time. And I never met him face to face. I never met the manager face to face. And to have your Palace career taken away from you over a phone call on holiday, I thought I was owed a little bit more than that. Probably not, being a bit fickle in football world. But that was how my Palace career ended. And I was genuinely devastated. Because along with me, there was Sean, Matty Lawrence, Alan Lee, who were a proper backbone of the team, to Clint Hill, to stay in the league, to stay in the Championship. And it's his right to do it, but George Burley coming and completely ripped the spine out of the team.
So what was it like coming back? Did you play against Palace again?
Southampton. I mean, the best thing for me was I went and got a move to a great club in Southampton, who's, again, another big club in my life. And we had three terrific back-to-back promotions to the Premier League. And coming back with Southampton, I remember I actually made one of the goals for Ricky Lambert to score at the back post against Cliney. And it's an odd feeling because I'm wearing a Southampton shirt, I want to do well for myself and my new team and teammates. But there's that sort of weird feeling of these people all cheered me on a little bit, do you know what I mean? So it's a real weird one to come back, and I've only ever been back since with Julian's testimonial. But I've got some terrific memories at Palace, and I wouldn't change them. I've learned a hell of a lot as a footballer at Palace regarding the highs and lows. And ever thankful to everyone at Palace for having me.
And finally, how's it going at the moment? So you're at Southampton coaching the academy and now first team coach at MK Dons. Are you enjoying that side of the game?
Yeah, really. I was lucky enough to leave Southampton and join Tiz at Exeter as a player. I made my mind up quite early joining Exeter that I wanted to go into coaching. Tiz was particularly supportive in that. In Wednesdays, I'd often go and help the academy coach and help with the under-18s there. And then sort of the playing coaching sort of transition was quite easy, because Tiz would let me take certain sessions in the first team. And then the playing days sort of dwindled out and it was more coaching. So, and that's what sort of led to me going, went to Southampton to go and work in the under-18s and left Tiz to go and learn and develop more as a coach. And thankful now that Tiz has given me the opportunity to come back into the first team with him, with hopefully a little bit more knowledge and know-how than I worked with him previously. So it's going great. And we've come to a club with a huge amount of potential. It's in the wrong league, but we are where we are, and it's for us to try and build and fulfil the potential at the place house. So it's a great project. We're just trying to get the ball rolling and get the club moving in the right direction, and hopefully we do that sooner rather than later.
Cool, perfect.
Done.
That was nice.
Danny Butterfield there, and what a top bloke he is. I hope everything goes well for him at Milton Keynes. Thank you to Danny for giving up your time, and also thank you to the guy from the Milton Keynes media team who gave us a lift to the station afterwards. Right, now, a man who has been in great form recently, he's just won Premier League Goal of the Month for that incredible goal against Man City. It's Andros Townsend, and here he is talking to Premier League Productions this week.
Andros, I've got to start by asking you about the goal against Man City. Do you ever get tired of watching it back?
No, and I think I've seen it a good few times as well, if I'm being honest. No, it was everything about the game, the opponent, the strike, it was perfection. And yeah, I think it was a strike like that needed to beat the champions away from home. And yeah, just thankfully it was me that managed to do it.
What do you feel now when you watch it back, now that you've sort of got the benefit of hindsight and you can see everything? What does it make you feel?
Obviously, proud. Still don't know how I managed to hit it that perfectly from that far out. But no, yeah, just sense of pride every time I watch it, and it just seems to get better and better.
Oh, and like you say, the context of it, given where Palace were in the league at the time and the fact it was against the champions at the Etihad, you know, there's a lot riding on that.
I think everything about it was against probably one of the best teams I've ever faced away from home. We barely had any of the ball. It was a crucial moment, and 30 yards out, volley is enough to win any game, and thankfully it did.
I think a lot of other fans around the world, not just Palace fans, were celebrating as well.
Yeah, I got a lot of messages from Liverpool fans, believe it or not. Yeah. So I'm sure they enjoyed it as well.
Cool. Well, let's move on to talking about the team. I think it's fair to say it's been a pretty good month or so, especially from December sort of onwards. What does it feel like playing in the team at the moment?
Yeah, everyone's got confidence. Everyone's working hard. December's always a critical month in any season. And I feel like before December, we were maybe a few points off where we should be, where we could have been, and to get a few results in December and kind of claw our way back into it was pleasing. But now we have to build on that. We have to start consistently getting results and putting performances together, and yeah, see where it takes us.
I think one of the criticisms that was levelled at the squad perhaps pre-December was that the team was so reliant on the goals of Wilf. But it does feel like now a lot of people are chipping in. You know, Jeff, yourself, Jordan, Luca, they're all there's a lot more goals coming from a lot more different.
Yeah, I think if you watch our matches, there's a lot more than the scoreline tells you. I think the last home game against Cardiff, yeah, it was 0-0, but we've had 31 or 30 odd shots. We've created so many chances. The ball's just not falling in the net in certain games. And yeah, the main thing we need to do is just keep creating the chances, and you know, eventually your luck's going to turn.
I mean, and what does it feel for you when you sort of see your teammates chipping in on the score sheet as well? You must feel a pride at that.
Yeah, of course, we all need to chip in with goals, and Wilf can't do it all on his own. I think the match we won without Wilf for the first time in however many years kind of gave everyone confidence and belief. We've built on that, and even though Wilf's still playing incredibly well, you've got other players chipping in with goals is a bonus.
We're hearing that that Christian's not too far away from returning from injury. That will be a huge boost when it happens, I'm sure, because it feels like you're in desperate need of more help up top in the striking position.
Yeah, I've said before, Christian's a fantastic player, especially for a winger like myself. To look up and see him in the box is perfect for me, and 9 times out of 10 he gets his head on the crosses. But at the moment, Jordan's playing really well. Connor's coming back into full fitness. Myself and Wilf have played up front at times, so we're good in that situation, whether it's Christian or whoever it may be.
And do you think it's an area that perhaps could be strengthened in this window, do you think?
I think you can strengthen anywhere, but if nobody does come in, we're sorted. Like the names I've just mentioned, we've got 3 or 4 players who can play up front and do a good job. So, yeah, no, if it does happen, great. If it doesn't, even better.
Give me a sense of what it's like working with Roy, because am I right in saying he gave you your England call-up? Yeah, so obviously you've got the connection with him from there, but also now moving on to here, and you seem to be enjoying a fantastic working relationship. What's it like with him every day?
Of course, even before he joined Palace, he's a manager who's always put his faith in me. Whether I was in the team at Spurs or out the team, he'd always select me in the England squads and give me game time, and 9 times out of 10 I'd repay that faith. So coming here, he's been no different. It's just been on a more daily basis. He's very hands-on on the training pitch. He likes to do a lot of shape work and kind of drill into your mind what you're going to face on a Saturday afternoon. And yeah, no, at the moment it seems to be working for us, and long may it continue.
6 points above the relegation zone. It's been a fantastic month or so, but things can change very quickly. Is that something that worries you, or is it more that you know, there's still a lot of football to be playing?
It doesn't worry me. Of course, you can't only be looking ahead. We've been in these situations in the last 2 seasons as well, so we know what we're in for. We know if we few bad results, we get dragged back in. So we're kind of half looking up and half looking below us as well. But we just need to, like I've said before, focus on our own performances, work on consistency, and hopefully we'll be all right.
Watford up next in the Premier League. They are 8th in the table. What do you make of the football they've been playing under Javi Gracia this season? Have you watched much of them?
Yeah, they've been playing really well, even when we played them earlier on in the season. It was a tough match away from home, and in the end, they nicked it 2 or 3-1, I think. 2-1? Yeah, they nicked it 2-1. So it's going to be a difficult game again. It's always a physical game when you play Watford, and yeah, we have to be ready for it.
At home, though, so...
Yeah, at home, the last few games at home, we've been playing really well. The fans have been really behind us and up for it. So hopefully we need them again on Saturday, and hopefully it can pull us to a victory.
And then I think after that, it's Liverpool and then Spurs. So there's a couple of huge games there. But, you know, after the result against Man City, you must fancy yourself.
Yeah, it's a weird one at Palace. We thrive off the big teams. We're more focused on the teams in and around us, the Watfords, the Cardiffs, those sort of games. The top teams, they speak for themselves. You know what you're going to deal with, but... Yeah, they're kind of free hits that you kind of have no pressure. So at Palace, for some reason or another, we always tend to do well in those games. So it's the games with the teams in and around us, the Watfords, that we're kind of focused on and where we need to improve.
Just a couple of questions on yourself, if I might. The stunning goal aside, how do you feel your performances have been this season? How do you feel you're playing?
Of course, I'm playing okay. Any player is going to sit here and say they'd like to improve. I'd like to score more goals, get more assists, which I've made no secret in the past. But I think I've played almost every minute in the month of December and January so far. So I'm in a great place physically, and yeah, hopefully I can just go the extra mile and start adding some more goals to my game.
You've been here a little while now. Does it really feel like home, this place, to you? Is it somewhere you can see yourself staying for many years?
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah, I've been here a few years now. I think I'm settled now. Like I said, I've got the manager that trusts me. I've got great teammates. So, yeah, I'm not looking to go anywhere else in a hurry, that's for sure.
Give me a sense of how often fantasy football gets mentioned between you and your teammates. You mentioned that you have a mini league with you and your mates.
Yeah, it gets mentioned quite a bit. We have a mini league, head-to-head league as well. So, yeah, it gets quite tasty between the boys and the staff. And it's quite competitive. Yeah, so no, we're enjoying that.
Are there any sort of teammates that take it that much more seriously than anyone else? Who perhaps takes it most seriously?
I'd say James McArthur is probably the one that takes it the most seriously. He's always going on about his transfers and who he should put in and asking for advice, this and that. So, yeah, I'd be disappointed if he wasn't at the top towards the end of the season.
He probably knows a thing or two about wild cards and when to use
them. Yeah, and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
And then the last one, if you were to pick three Palace players, three teammates of yours, that you should ask managers all over the world to pick for their fantasy team, who would you pick?
Well, at the moment...
Choose yourself.
Yeah. In the moment, in my team, I've got Aaron Wan-Bissaka, I've got James Tompkins, and I've got myself, so those would be the three recommendations.
Does it feel weird picking yourself? It almost encourages you to do better, doesn't it?
Yeah, I didn't at the start of the season, but when I went up front, it made sense, because in the game I'm a midfielder, so midfielder up front kind of makes sense.
Get the clean sheet bonus as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Andros Townsend, they're always a great speaker. And now let's head over to Selhurst Park, where me and Statman have actually found a different room to do the interview this time round.
I'm the Statman.
I'm the Statman. Yes, that's right. I'm somewhere different this week. It might sound nice, actually, because there's a lovely sponge on the wall. I'm joined by Statman in one of the post-match interview rooms at Selhurst Park. This is nice, isn't it?
It's fantastic, Chris. I can't believe you taking me in here. I've never felt more like a player. Just to give some background, we're very much having this chat in front of all the sponsors here on the media backdrop boards. Roy's going to be in here tomorrow, isn't he?
He will be, yes. This is where he'll speak to Sky, probably.
Yeah, and the man of the match in here?
Yeah, they pick... I mean, I can talk about how it works. I can't remember the exact rules. One player has to do an interview as soon as they come off the pitch. It's called the flash interview. And then the broadcast will get together and say who they want. Then our press officers will decide who they want to put up for interviews. Because there might be people that, he did it last week and the week before that.
More politics so, to it first.
Yeah, I think they give like three options. But if it's a clear like winning goal scorer, then you'd be expected to put them up. Yeah, and then they'd come in here and do an interview for Sky. And then they move to the next room and do the BBC. Then they go to another room, do PLP. And then by that time, they're exhausted.
And they've got to you.
Yeah. And the last thing they want to see is me.
Is Chrissy Grierson welcoming them in to his... So you have one of these private rooms that's just you, isn't it? You thought putting posters on the wall and really making it your own? Or...
No, it's split between... My eyes is a split room, so it's half. There's two in it. There was a big drama one season where people kept leaving bacon on the floor from sandwiches they'd eaten earlier. And kicked off about it.
This man's a vegan, if anyone knows. Yeah. That's like an insult, isn't it? That's like a smear to you, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no more bacon now. I've got the chief exec involved. It's all gone. Clean floors.
Bacon gates. You don't hear about this stuff, do you?
Yeah.
It's the stuff behind the scenes at Selhurst.
Genuinely, I was taking photos of bacon on the floor and sending it, saying there's bacon on the floor again.
I'm sure our CEO loved that. I'm sure that was just what he wants to be dealing with. Over January, maybe January transfer window as well on. So we've got that. Do we sign
a
player?
Yeah, we missed out on a few signings because of the bacon.
But the bacon was sorted?
Yeah, all gone. Yeah, perfect. Can't complain.
Good.
There you go.
Good. The important things were done.
Right, Statman.
Hold on a second. Right, so you had me on before Christmas.
We've had a winter break.
We've had a little winter break, haven't we? We haven't had on for this run of games. You, and I'll hold my hands up, you unbelievably, as your first prediction, said we would beat Manchester City away from home. You said that, recorded it, and said, if not, you will apologise live on air. Now, I've lost count of the amount of apologies I've had to do. Got my stats wrong, or said a prediction. First one you've done, Man City away, and you got it. Thoughts?
No apology from me. No apology needed. Yeah, of course.
Where's that come
of
from?
Course. Well, just, of course we're going to beat Man City away.
Yeah.
It's Palace.
So, to be fair, unbelievable. Really, really well done. I mean, I want another prediction from you after this one, to be honest.
Okay,
so,
okay.
We'll roll them out then. Let's go. Got good, I've got bad, I've got mixed, I've got ones to watch out for. Let's start with the good. Right, our form against Watford at home.
Pretty good.
Won 5 of our last 7 home matches against Watford. It's actually pretty good. Before that as well, obviously, we've had some great memories over them at Wembley in particular, haven't we? Haven't included them in my stats, but... Oh, when I see we play Watford, I get a warm, fuzzy feeling inside.
Yeah, me too. I enjoy the Watfordness now.
Yeah, yeah. Not so much the return game this season, was it?
No, I didn't like that. Because their fans wind me up. Mm. One guy told me, like, I can't reveal what he said, but as I was walking back to my seat in the media area, he saw me in Palace. He said, "When's Zaha going to stop diving?" I said, "Well, actually, you're going to be embarrassed about yourself tonight when you get home, because when you see the video, you'll realise it was a red card." He didn't take my patronising smugness very well. He shouted at me, "No, it wasn't. It was a dive." I was like, "No, it wasn't. No, you're going to be. Trust me, you're going to be embarrassed."
Yeah.
And then he just told me to F off.
And threw bacon at you?
No, no bacon involved.
Okay. No, I'm with you there.
Do yourself a favour and go back to your seat. That's pretty much what he said.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But it was him that approached me, so...
That's madness, isn't it? And was when did the mascot retire? Their mascot? Was that earlier on this season?
He did, but is he back?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know whether I dreamt that or not.
No, I don't know.
I'm not going to look it up now.
No, I was going to say. No. We'll be. That's a long pause for this, isn't it?
I'll reveal it in the link after. I haven't recorded yet.
Yeah. Okay, right. We digress. Let me give you a negative one just to balance it out. If Watford win, it'd be quite historic for them. It would be their first league double against us since 2001, 2002. So that's what they'll be here looking for with their tails up. slightly negative one, but let me whack a positive stance on it. So we've actually now scored the least goals at home in the Premier League this season, rather disappointingly. However, our defensive record now, I mean, I'm pleased pundits are starting to point it out, unbelievable clean sheet record. So at home this is, so although we've scored the least goals at home, only Liverpool and Chelsea have kept more home clean sheets than us this season. And overall, we're in fourth. We're in Champions League spot with 8 clean sheets this season.
Wow, that's brilliant.
That defence on the right, wingers don't like him, Wan-Bissaka, PVA like glue on the left, and the best centre-back partnership, arguably in history, with Sacco and Tompkins, and the goalkeeper situation. Shall I move on to that with a couple of stats?
Yeah, go on then.
So I've got to be honest, I'm a massive Wayne fan. And I mean, a lot of opinions are split, aren't they, with Palace fans at the moment. Vincenzo Gaeta's come in. What a job he's done. So obviously with him in goal, we've had 5 Premier League games, won 3, drawn 1 and lost 1 against Chelsea, which, you know, fair enough. And we've conceded just 0.6 goals when he's been in goal. Wayne obviously had much more games this season, and obviously a lot of tough opponents. He's conceded 1.4 games on average per game. So interesting little tussle there. And
it's good to have two keepers. Because obviously Wayne won Player of the Month shortly before he got injured.
Yeah.
It was just before, actually. So
pity that, isn't it? But really healthy. I think that's really good for us to have that. And now with a solid back 4 in front of them, that's really, really pleasing. I'm happy with that.
Wow, that was almost like match of the day punditry there.
Yeah, thank you. I've been working on that. Yeah, thank you. Let's focus on the attack, though. Back onto that. Here's a stat. Who scored more goals this year? Jornayu or Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi?
Should I play dumb and...
Yeah. In fact, now that's a rhetorical one. I shouldn't have waited for a response there.
Yeah.
Jornayu 2.
Wow.
Yeah. Ronaldo and Messi 1.
No.
Thank you very much. Yeah. A little less patronising next time. I thought that was a good one. But yeah, Ayew finally found his boots, hasn't he? Good news, Palace fans here. Ayew quite enjoys playing against Watford. He's got his best scoring record against Watford. So he scored 3 goals in his last 4 starts against Watford. So decent one. He'll be liking that the Hornets are coming here tomorrow. Right, ones to watch though from a Watford point of view here. I always seem to say it. I played 6-a-side in Brixton on a Thursday night. I digress, but yes. There's a bloke who's identical to Troy Deeney. And we hate him. I now understand what it's like to play against a striker like that. He's so aggressive. He's so big. He looks just like him as well. And and strikes fear into all of our hearts when we play against them. And Troy Deeney's no different, isn't he? He knows how to rub us up the wrong way.
Does he tell all your team to purposely come and kick you one at a time and share it about?
Essentially, yes. Okay. Essentially, he does. Yes, yes. He's also captain, yeah. But anyway, no one wants to hear about that. Let's move on to Troy Deeney. He scored 4 goals in his last 4... been involved in 4 goals in his last Premier League games now. 3 goals and 1 assist. And that's more in his previous 23 in the competition. So he had a bit of a barren run. Bang, he's now banging form, annoyingly. And also, a bit of a weird one to point out, but here we go. Watford defender Daryl Yanmar is to be watched tomorrow. He's been involved in 5 Premier League goals in 7 appearances against Palace. He loves playing against us. So
that's but he got destroyed by Wilf when we played at home before. Wilf had him on toast and then put it in for MacArthur.
He did. It doesn't turn up in my stats. Wilf destroyed him, put him on toast. But
yeah, so that makes up for all of that, you just said.
Yeah, let's go with that. And after all that, let's have a few predictions then. So, do you want me to kick off before the guru comes and strikes?
Go on.
I'll let you have a go. So I've never got it right. Let's throw that one out there. I'm going 2-1, Palace win. I'm going a Luka Milivojevic penalty. And I'm going Jordan Ive to keep up his scoring record with Daryl Yanmar and Troy Deeney being involved for the goal. Maybe Yanmar knocks it down for Deeney or vice versa. So 2-1 Palace win. The guru?
3-0 Palace win. 3-0. I'm going to match your Luka penalty.
Yeah.
Jordan Ayew.
Yeah.
And Wilfried Zaha's going to finish things off.
Time he scored now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we'd be happy with either of those countries.
3-0 Palace. I am an optimist. Okay, so that's everything, I think. Time to hand over to Roy Hodgson in his weekly press conference. Actually, before we do that, what do you think he's going to get asked about?
Oh, God, put me on the spot here. What's he going to get asked about? Signings. It's just, he's just hassled, berated throughout, isn't he? January, oh, are you going to sign? Are you going to sign?
Okay, here's the journalists with some who you're going to sign talk.
Christian Benteke back in full training this week. Is he fit enough to make the squad this weekend?
Yes, I guess he is. I mean, obviously, he's short of match practice and short of that sharpness, I suppose, you only get from playing games. So it would be a risk putting him in the squad to some extent, but he's come through the training sessions very, very well, so there's no reason for me to write him off.
What a timely boost midway through the transfer window. Does Benteke's return to fitness affect what you're going to do in the rest of the window?
Well, we've lost quite a few players now, so we probably still, technically speaking, are a bit short of numbers, but I'm very aware in this transfer window that it's not a question of numbers, it's a question of the necessary quality and finding a player who really does suit our profile and who would definitely be of great help to us in terms of boosting our squad with a view to possibly playing in the team. And that's a hard person to find. I don't think I'm the only manager, if he's being honest, who finds himself in that position.
Jermaine Defoe was saying this week he turned down Palace.
That's not true. That's not true. So, did people check that one up? Did they or not?
I think that's what he's been saying himself.
Oh well, I can't help that. It's not true, unfortunately. So, no, we had no interest in Jermaine Defoe.
But is it true to say that you're still looking for another striker in this window?
Well, Jermaine Defoe is like a number of strikers. I saw his name mentioned in relation to the club. But it's one thing people relating their players that they are anxious to find a move for to our club, and another thing our club initiating moves to sign a player. And I can state quite categorically that we made no move at all to sign Jermaine here. I like Jermaine Defoe, work with him. I think he's a good player, and I'm pleased that he's gone to Glasgow Rangers, but we weren't one of the candidates for signature.
I won't throw names at you, but another name, Josh Madger, the young Sunderland striker, being linked with Palace today. Is there anything in that as far
Not as just us, I believe. I think, you know, he's a name that's popular at the moment, being linked with a lot of people. So there is no point, quite simply, me commenting or speculating on names that are connected with us, because I'm not, especially when it comes to players like Josh Madger playing in Division 1, I'm not 100% certain what our scouting department are targeting or thinking about with regards to the future, but it's not a name that I and Doug Freeman have discussed with regard to this transfer window up to now.
You let Sorloth go on loan to Ghent. He came a year ago but hasn't scored in the Premier League. He seems to be saying that he wants to come back and prove his worth here.
Yep.
Do you think he still can?
I do, and that's why we agreed to loan him out. I suppose the ultimately conservative move would be, well, we don't have a big squad and we've got Connor Wickham and Christian Benteke coming back after long injury period. So the conservative thing to do would be, well, we better keep him in case the need arises. But we made, I thought, the correct decision, which is he's got a chance now to go and play at Ghent, to play for his former manager. He'll be obviously one of the first names on the team sheet, so he'll be playing every week. And I think that's going to be absolutely what he needs at this moment in time. And what it needs also to make him a better player for us at the end of the loan spell. So I'm hoping that the loss of him is not going to affect us too greatly. That would depend on injuries, I guess.
And you've let Naya Kirby go to Blackpool today. What would you say about that one?
Exactly the same. I mean, Naya, of course, has only been on the fringes of the first team squad because we had quite a large squad before these now five have left us. So he hasn't had as many training sessions with me as I would have liked. And that's been partly due to injury. But he's a player we really believe in very strongly. And I think what he needs now is something which we can't give him at this moment in time, i.e. a regular 90 minutes at senior level. Now he'll get that 90 minutes at senior level with Blackpool, and I'm really happy that Terry McPhillips and his club have decided to take him on.
Roy, Wayne Hennessy under investigation by the FA. He says it's not what it seems. What would you say about that?
I believe him totally. I have no reason to disbelieve him. The other players, they had no awareness of anything inappropriate, so much so that they had no idea before the photo was posted that anything was happening. So Wayne has explained it very satisfactorily to my way of thinking, both to me and the club. And I know Wayne, I know the type of man he is, and I have no hesitation whatsoever in backing him and backing his version of the story.
It's Watford again this weekend. You lost there back in August. In that match, Capu got a yellow card when many thought it should have been a red for a tackle on Wilf. After that match, Troy Deeney said, "We took it in turns to kick Wilf. We wouldn't do it too many times because we'd get booked." That was an incendiary thing to say from a pro about another pro. What did you make of those comments?
It's going back into the past. I mean, what do you make of them? I suppose at the time I made of them what everyone else in football made of them. I think Troy Deeney is a very honest guy. I don't think it was a wise thing to say, and I'm pretty certain when I see Troy tomorrow, and I always have a very friendly meeting with him before the game as the opposing captain, I'm pretty certain if I said to him, "What about those comments?" the first thing he would say to me, "It was a mistake." But it's a mistake that's been made. And with regard to the tackle, that was also a mistake. It was a bad tackle and didn't get punished, in our opinion, the way it should have been, but these mistakes happen too. It's a very simple thing to happen. I tend not to live in the past. I mean, I remember our game against them very well. We actually played well that day, and I thought we were unfortunate not to get at least a draw from the game. But it was a long time ago, and it has no effect whatsoever on the match tomorrow. Watford have improved. They're a better team now, I think, than they were when we played them at the start of the season. But I'd like to think that we might be a better team as well. So it's going to be a very good game. And as far as I'm concerned, any comments by any of their players, i.e. Troy, or a tackle that's happened in the past, it belongs to the past and has no bearing on the game tomorrow. And I believe the referee will go into the game as a bona fide top-class Premiership referee, and referee as it should be refereed. And if anything goes wrong in the game or anything happens in the game that shouldn't happen, he will react to it.
But didn't Troy's comment suggest that Wilf's being highlighted and targeted by some teams unfairly?
We get that all the time. We That's something that you can do nothing about as a manager, nothing that Wilf can do about either. And I think the best thing we can do is to leave that subject matter totally aside and pass any responsibility for decisions regarding fouls, regarding anything that's said or done on the field to the referees, or in the case of Troy, who made a remark to the FA. I don't want to get involved in that at all, and it has no effect whatsoever on my thinking with regard to tomorrow's game. I can definitely state that.
Just finally, any other team news for this game, Roy?
No. Our squad has been reduced, as you rightly pointed out, by the fact that we've let four players go now, I think, or five with Naya Kirby. So we've let five players go, if you like, from the extended squad. Naya was in the extended squad, which is a lot of players to lose, I guess. But we still have 22 players, three goalkeepers and 19 outfield players, and that's a strong group. I believe very strongly in that group. And all we have to hope for now, really, is that we don't suffer a large number of injuries at one and the same time, because if that doesn't happen, I trust and believe these 22 players will see us through to the end of the season and get us where we want to be.
And just a word on the Suarez dislocation. It's terrible news, isn't it?
Yeah, I was really disappointed about that, I think I said after the game, because Papa's done so well trying to get back from his horrendous accident, and really for over a year now he's been training every day, and I've been surprised that we haven't been inundated with requests to either buy him or take him on loan. And I suppose the reason for that is he's a left back. And as a left back, you don't get a chance to show what you can do very often unless you're the first choice left back. But it was his chance on Saturday. I was really looking forward to seeing him play. And it only lasted 10 or 15 minutes and he picked up the dislocated shoulder. He'll come back from it. He's strong mentally and physically. And I can only hope that the next time he gets a chance in the first team, he will show everybody what I know to be true. That is, he's still a very, very good left back at Premiership level. Thanks.
Anita.
Afternoon, Roy.
Afternoon.
The team are enjoying a good run at the moment. Three wins out of the last five Premier League matches. What do you think has been the main difference over the last five matches compared to earlier in the season?
Well, we had good spells early in the season. You'd have to really analyse virtually every game to give you an answer to that. The answer is what's happening now that wasn't happening before, nothing. Why do we win against Wolves and lose against, let's say, who did we lose against that we shouldn't have lost against, let's say, Brighton? Why do we lose against Brighton and you beat Wolves? Well, that's what the Premier League's about, you know. You try to play at the same level, you try and reach the same heights with your football, but it's goals that decide games, and sometimes you let him in at the wrong end or fail to score him at the right end. But nothing has changed in particular, and for us to say we're having a good run, it would have to extend more than these last three or four games.
And looking at the table, you're currently 14th, 6 points clear from the relegation zone. How much pressure do you feel you're under to secure a good result this weekend at home against Watford?
You mean me personally, or the club, or the team?
Both, you and the team.
We're always under pressure, every single match. So no more pressure than I was under on Saturday to win the game against Grimsby, or previous to that Wolves, or previous to that Chelsea. That's part and parcel of our lives as football managers and players. We know what a good result tomorrow could mean for us, because we don't necessarily look in the way that you're suggesting, how far are we above the relegation zone. We also actually look and see how far we are from the top 10, because we believe a top 10 finish is a distinct possibility for us. At least it's got to be a goal for us. And we know that every time we play at home against a team that is certainly not one of the ones that no one gives us any chance of beating at home, we need to make or take full advantage of that and to win the game. So the pressure is there, as it always will be, but the players, I think, are capable of assuming that responsibility, and I'm pretty sure they'll go out tomorrow to do everything they can to win the game.
Watford can be a physical and intimidating side at times. How do you go about preventing your players from getting drawn into confrontation with them?
I don't know. I'm not prepared to make that statement. You would have to stand for that they are a physically intimidating team. I'm not prepared to say that. I think they're a very good football team. I think they've got some very good players. I think they work very hard. I think that they show the correct amount of aggression when they lose the ball to try and win it back, just as we try to show the right amount of aggression to win the ball back. So I don't go along, if you like, with that theory that tomorrow all of a sudden we're playing a physically intimidating team. If you said to me Watford is a game where the Watford fans will definitely target verbally one of our players due to something which happened some 5 or 6 years ago, when I'm not even certain I was in the country, perhaps that's the case. But, you know, all you can do as a football manager, and all Javier Garcia can do as a football manager, is to prepare his team just as I prepare mine to play a good game of football and a correct game of football. We can't, unfortunately, have a great deal of sway over what fans might be thinking or shouting.
And lastly, the FA Cup. You may have fancied a decent run in the competition this season. What are your thoughts on being drawn against Spurs in the fourth round?
I think it's a good tie. It's a good game. It would have been a worse tie had we been drawn away, because Tottenham are a very difficult team to beat at the best of times, and to be drawn away to them would have, you know, given us a severely uphill task. But playing them at home, last time we played them at home, we lost by a goal to nil, somewhat unfortunately. It was a very good game of football. You know, when you play them, you're going to be meeting a good team that play good football, but we think in our best moments we are capable of matching those teams. It's a home tie. It's the fourth round of the FA Cup. It's an occasion to really look forward to. There'll be a full house, and it'll be a question quite simply of, you know, let's see who the best team is on the day, and that team will go forward and the other team will go out.